Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com and the YouTube channel is youtube.com/redrockfantasybasketballpodcast. If you're watching this live, welcome. Thank you very much. I am doing another free agency recap show. This is the third of the free agency shows. Today I am joined by the one and only Seth Klein. Seth, how are you going?
I'm doing well.
It's good to have you back. Hope you enjoyed your 4th of July weekend. Good times?
Yeah, good times. I was actually back east in Massachusetts with my family, enjoying the beach and stuff like that. So definitely enjoyable. I got to see a good fireworks show.
Sounds awesome, man. So I've done two free agency podcasts already where a lot of the big names have gone, but that doesn't mean that there's not things to talk about. I was shocked. The last one I did was with Matt Smith across the weekend. And then when I was talking to you about this one, we thought, oh, maybe there's not going to be a huge amount of guys to sign. And I've gone through and written down, I think about 20 names of people who have signed in the last couple of days. And not all of them have relevance for standard leagues, but it's always worth talking about some of them because they do impact some of the other players who may have been signed, other guys who are around. There's definitely implications with all these signings. And that's one of the reasons, Seth, where when you're looking at rankings for next season, it's almost impossible to do anything until we get into really mid-August when everything is really settled down. Let's get started. Now, actually, before we get started, Seth, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. I'm on there all day. You affectionately call me a vampire. I don't sleep, answering all questions all day. And you could also find my writing at thefantasyfix.com, rasball.com, and I'm also the editor at rotowriters.com. So check me out there.
Yeah, so Seth is all over the place writing stuff for not just basketball, for all sports as well, football, baseball as well. Now, Seth,
I've been other guys who are around is definitely
something's happening.
We're getting
some feedback issues, but I think we're all good now. We're all sorted. Now, Seth, the guys who had signed previously, so you know, your Aldridges, Tyson Chandlers, DeAndre Jordans. Do you have any quick thoughts on those guys? I've touched on them already on previous shows, but any thoughts that you want to throw in the ring about some of those guys that signed in the early portions of free agency?
Well, I mean, with the Jordan signing, it's a big signing for Dallas. It really gives them a younger nucleus. They're getting older they got Tyson Chandler's gone. Dirk's going to be gone soon, but they add Jordan, two Parsons. It's going to be a fun team to watch. I don't know how much better they actually got necessarily with that deal. I think Chandler is still a very good player now. He can actually play offense, doesn't shoot 40% from the line. But in the long run, I think it's going to be a great move for them. Jordan's back home in his home state, and I think it gives him some more versatility and youth.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that it makes them better. It makes them better in the future. But obviously, Jordan's a lot younger than Tyson Chandler, so it's a decent future move for them, but I don't know if it changes much for them this season. I don't think it changes much for DeAndre Jordan's fantasy value, to be honest, as I discussed the other day. What me and Matt were saying the other day is that most of these guys that have changed teams, it doesn't appear that there's much in terms of the change in what their fantasy value is. Would you agree with that? Or is there someone that stands out to you in these early signings that really took a big jump in their value? Or a big drop?
Well, you know, a lot of the signings, the big signings really, most of them were players that stayed put on their current teams. Butler, Gasol, Middleton, guys like that. I do think that, and well, I'm going to leave a few guys because we're covering them later today. But I think Aldridge is going to benefit a lot from that signing. And don't get me wrong, great numbers in Portland, but the efficiency in San Antonio is just amazing. I think you're going to see his shooting percentage, free throw percentage go up. And I think he's really going to be able to crash the boards better with Duncan there, and learn from them as well. And I'm a Knicks fan too, so I do like the Robin Lopez deal. I think that's really going to – I like it for our team, but I think that's really going to help him fantasy-wise. I mean, he's going to be the guy there down low. He's going to get a lot of boards, a lot of rebounds. I think that boosts his fantasy value a lot. Rondo, I think, well, I don't like Rondo that much for fantasy. I think you're going to see his scoring go up a bit in Sacramento. They only have a couple other guys there that really are scorers. I think you're going to try, they're going to try and get as much as they can out of him with that 1 year deal. So I think those are a couple of guys, off the top of my head.
I think that's all pretty accurate. All right, Seth, let's get into these guys who have signed in the last couple of days and see what we can talk about. Actually, before we get into the signings, there was a trade that happened in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours or so, which nothing we talk about here has been finalized. But David Lee is apparently headed to the Boston Celtics in exchange for Gerald Wallace, who will then be stretched and waived in Golden State. Okay, Wallace has no benefit, obviously, in terms of anything from fantasy, but David Lee to Boston. Okay, so you're going to have Lee there, you're going to have Sullinger, you're going to have Tyler Zeller, you're going to have Kelly Olynyk, you're going to have Amir Johnson. This is not good for any of their value. Well, David Lee's value goes up, but he doesn't become David Lee from 2 years ago, does he?
No, he's not, but I do like the landing spot. I mean, it can't be for fantasy value. I think he's going to be a sleeper. I think when he's gotten minutes, he's been a good rebounder. We know he doesn't block shots. He's not going to do much except for score, rebound, get a few assists. But he should get minutes there, assuming Tyler Zeller doesn't get a ton of minutes. And I know Sullinger's there. I think there's a possibility they could try to trade Sullinger at some point this year. He's going to be a free agent after the season. They've had sort of a few run-ins with him, showing up late to practice, getting hurt, admitting he was out of shape. Doesn't seem to really love the game right now. I don't know if they're going to be a team that's going to fork over a ton of money next year with the injuries he's had. But I think if David Lee gets 25, 28 minutes a game, that's an easy double-double for him in my book. I mean, that's all he's done his whole career is put up double-doubles.
Yeah, look, that's true. The problem I have is that Boston's front court rotation was already odd last season when you had Zeller, Olynyk, Sullinger and Bass there. They basically split the minutes and it was hard to rely on anybody. Okay, they've lost Bass, but they've added two new guys into that rotation, Amir Johnson and David Lee. So to me, that means the minutes could potentially get split even further. And it goes again with Boston having 10, 11 guys who are worthy of 25 minutes on their roster, and it's just not going to work out that way. So someone is going to miss out. Now, whether that's Lee, whether if Sullinger gets traded, obviously that clears things up a bit. Someone's going to miss out on minutes. They just signed Amir Johnson to a big deal. So you'd have to think that he's in line for 25 to 28 minutes a night. I just don't know how it's all going to work out for them. None of them can play the three, which is probably the biggest hole there in Boston, even though Jay Crowder has been re-signed. I don't really know what this means. It doesn't mean that he's Golden State Warriors 2013-14 David Lee. He's not that guy. He's not All-Star David Lee, but he might be just outside the top 100. But there's just too many guys there for me to really, until we see how it's going to play out or see preseason rotations or anything, I've got no idea what's going to happen. There's five guys who legitimately could make a case to be starters and get 30 minutes a night, and there's not enough minutes for that to happen.
And that's why I think someone's going to be traded, whether it's Sullinger, maybe they sell Olynyk when they can. Obviously, they're committed to Amir Johnson, but I mean, David Lee is carrying a $15.5 million contract this year, and he will be a free agent, but I don't think they're going to be sitting 15. They didn't trade for him to sit $15 million on the bench, that's for sure.
No. He's going to play some minutes, but yeah, I'm cautious as to how high that he's going. He'd probably be someone that I reckon that people seem to love David Lee. People were wanting to draft him last season and pick him back up when he came back from injury, even with Draymond Green putting up those big numbers. So people have an unrealistic expectation of David Lee at times, and I reckon that'll mean that he'll go way too early from where I want to look at him. let's move on to some of these other signings, Seth. I'll go down my list here. First one, maybe not a big one, Alan Anderson signed with Washington, but he provides them good depth behind Bradley Beal at the two, decent depth behind Otto Porter at the three, and it basically means that Kelly Oubre is going to be pretty much a zero for this season. Would you agree with that?
I like that signing for them, though.
I think it's really good for them. It's great depth. And Alan Anderson was a guy who was a borderline 12-team league guy last year. I think he probably goes to a 14-team league, maybe 16-team league guy. But if he can provide them 22, 23 minutes off the bench, he's a guy that can hit some threes. He's a decent player. He's going to be useful for them. Not useful for majority of standard leagues, though. Leandro Barbosa re-signed with Golden State. There's no impact there. J.J. Barea, though, re-signed with Dallas. I mean, he didn't change teams. He's re-signed for 2 years, $5.6 million. But the key with this, Seth, is that Dallas doesn't have a point guard. He was the starter whenever Rondo was out last season. Is he the starter again?
They still have Devin Harris, right?
They did, but last year, whenever Rondo would go out, Barea would start and Harris would still come off the bench in his six-man role. So I imagine that's what they do again.
Yeah, unless they go out and they've been mentioning going out and maybe getting Jeremy Lin, I think that's a good fit for them. And obviously, if that's the case, he'll have decent value there.
Yeah, if Breyer happens to start and Lin doesn't come across and he gets those minutes, he can be he's definitely a 12-team league guy if he starts and plays 30 minutes, because he was putting up pretty good assist numbers. He hits threes, he can score. His percentages were okay. Occasional steals. He was an okay guy, not a great player, but if he's in that situation and they don't bring in anyone else, he's going to be the guy there, and he's going to be throwing lobs to DeAndre Jordan pretty much for the majority of the game. And he will be a guy that I don't think many people would consider, but you could grab him after pick 100 and get yourself a starting point guard and maybe get 4.5, 5 assists a game, which can be extremely valuable and almost impossible to get off the waiver wire. Brandon Bass headed to the Los Angeles Lakers. Is there a lot of irrational tweets coming across Twitter from Boston Celtics fan calling him a traitor for leaving the Celtics to go to the Lakers? And it just one thing, professional athletes, they don't care about rivalries or this is my hated, they don't care. It's their job. The fans care. The athletes don't care. He's not a traitor from going to the Celtics to the Lakers. You think he's going to turn down an opportunity for the Lakers because he played for Boston? Please. Anyway, he's gone to Boston. He's going to fit into that backup role, you'd think. But, Seth, Byron Scott is the coach. So whatever shouldn't be done is most likely to be done. So there's a big chance he cuts into Julius Randle's minutes, correct?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, honestly, I think it was a good signing for the Lakers.
I do too.
They needed a guy like that. And I don't, from a basketball perspective, I don't think it's a bad thing that he cuts into some of Randle's minutes. I mean, look, we're talking about a guy that's coming off surgery. He was hurt before the draft last year when he was drafted. So playing Randle a ton of minutes isn't in their best interest. Bass is a guy that can also, he's been in the league for a while. He can help him out. Mentor him, tutor him. I think it's a good move for them. And
I think it's a good move for them as well. I was partially joking before when I said that that Byron Scott's going to do the wrong thing, because rookies shouldn't play big minutes majority of the time. There's very few opportunities or very few times when a rookie should be getting 30 to 32 minutes. Now, we saw one guy get that sort of minutes last year, and that's Wiggins. Randle is, in essence, a rookie. He's not technically, but he played, 10 minutes last season. He's not going to be in there and be able to be relied upon for 35 minutes. So he might play 25 minutes a night, and Bass will play 25 minutes a night as well. And that's decent. And Bass, if there's a situation where Randle gets injured or gets hurt or is limited in minutes, Bass is not a bad fantasy guy. Points, rebounds, but the key thing with him is he shoots really great percentages, great free throws, good field goal percentage, can block some shots as well. It all depends on how it sort of plays out, but he's in a situation where he's got a chance for minutes, I think.
Yeah, and don't forget, Ed Davis is gone. Jordan Hill's going to be gone.
Carlos Boozer.
Yeah, so there's minutes for him there. I mean, they brought in Hibbert, but there's minutes there for sure at the power forward. But I Boston fans are just—they're just so funny. I know you're not a baseball guy, but they did the same thing in baseball a couple years. You know, every year when one of their Red Sox players signs on their team, trader. Like, what, like you said, what loyal? I mean, this is a player that's been on their team for what, 4 years before? I mean, he was.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was that long.
Yeah, it's not like he's a 20-year guy that's been on the team and left or something. It's ridiculous. Just like as if they really care that he left anyway. You know,
it's Brandon Bass. Like, calm down. All right, next one. Omri Caspi re-signs in Sacramento, 2 years, $6 million. He was good when he got opportunities last season when Gay was out, and I think it'll be a similar situation. He'll be a primary backup at the three. He'll play definitely some four because they don't really have a power forward, although Cousins will probably play a lot there with Corley Stein at the five. But again, a rookie center is not going to play 30 minutes a night. So Corley Stein might play 25. Cousins will play a lot more at center. And then you'll see Caspi getting 22 to 25 minutes, I'd say, backing up the three and the four position, meaning, again, he's that 14 to 16 team league guy. And he was really, really effective at the end of last season. I think a lot of people, if they weren't paying attention down the stretch, would be surprised at how good he was down the stretch last season. Any thoughts on Caspi, or is that's pretty straightforward?
Yeah, pretty much what you said. I think his value is more if Gay gets hurt, but I like it. I mean, for them, it's a cheap signing, and he's a good rotation guy, and 14-16 team sounds about right, but there could be more minutes. I mean, Jason Thompson, Carl Andrew both traded, so and sort of plays a position they don't really have a lot of, so I like him as a flyer late round in those leagues.
Yep. Now let's get onto a couple more of the bigger names here, Seth. Marc Gasol, 5 years, $110 million. There was never really any doubt of this. It does not change anything with his fantasy value. He's still that same sort of guy he was last year. Not a high rebounding center, but a guy who's going to do what he does, get nice assists, good scoring, good percentages, blocks, steals. He's just Marc Gasol. And that's, Memphis obviously needed him back. He's back. Nothing really to see there. Reggie Jackson in Detroit, 5 years, $80 million. This appeared to be the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of people on Twitter talking about salaries and increases in salaries and all that sort of stuff. Just in terms of people not necessarily overreacting, but people, okay, that they're done. This is a massive overpay. This is crazy. What's your thoughts on the signing first?
It's a tough signing considering they still have Brandon Jennings, but I think that'll remedy itself. I think they're going to end up trading him. But as far as money, I mean, you look at what some of these guys got. At some point, you just got to expect it. He's a good player. He played really well for them last year down the stretch, was getting, I think he had, a couple triple doubles, if I recall. Big assist numbers, young guy, and this is a guy they're gonna go forward with. It's part of their young nucleus with Andre Drummond and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and now Stanley Johnson, and I think that's the direction they want to go in. I don't see a problem with the money. I mean, when you're giving Tristan Thompson $80 million, I mean, I know he didn't officially sign right now, but I'd much rather give $80 million to Reggie Jackson. I mean, at least he's playing 40 minutes a game and can impact a game in other places but rebounding. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with that based on the other deals we saw. And when we look at next year when the CBA is going to give more cap space, I think that it's going to look like a steal at that point.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. Yeah, look, it's expensive probably. The Brandon Jennings thing is – not necessarily confusing because Jennings isn't going to be right. He's not going to be right till 2016. These things take a long time for Achilles to get over. He wouldn't even be physically able to play starters minutes for basically all of this season, Jennings, anyway. And then they can readdress that at the end of the season or next season. Reggie Jackson was a top 50 guy after his trade to Detroit. He had triple doubles, as you mentioned. He had a game where he got 20 assists. He was putting up routinely 10 assist games. Where do you have him sort of in a rough ballpark? I know I said before it's too early to do full rankings and stuff now, but is he a top 50 guy to you? Is he higher? Is he lower?
Yeah, I think he's a top 50 guy. I mean, last year we talked about him a lot before he was traded, about whether you should hold on to him, because we knew that I think we all said if he gets traded to a team where he's getting minutes, he's going to be a top 50 guy. And so, and he was, and now he is. So yeah, I think he's a top 50 guy, probably I'd go as far as saying top 10 point guard, maybe fantasy wise.
Yeah, that's possible. Yep. There's a chance he is a top. He could be, when all said and done, he could be a top 30 guy. Now that does not mean that you want to go and target him in the top 30, but he could easily be a top 30 guy. He could also finish around 65, that sort of area. So there's a bit of a range of where he could go, but he's got the potential to put up big numbers. I think probably the safest area is around that 50 mark. And yeah, he's going to be a pretty decent guy. He was good. He was clearly good. When he was in Detroit, he was putting up great fantasy numbers. Doesn't mean he's great on the court. His defense is, it suffers at times. His turnovers sometimes can be problematic, but otherwise for fantasy, I think he's going to be a pretty solid mid-round option. Now let's cover a couple of Williamses. Seth, Lou Williams to the Lakers, 3 years, $21 million. And then we have Mo Williams to Cleveland for 2 years, $2.4 million. Lou Williams in the Lakers. Okay, I'm going to get something else off my chest here. I've seen a number of comments and tweets going around about saying the Lakers now have the best guard combination in the entire NBA. Now that is, it's pretty close to ludicrous.
But that was that Chris Palmer that said that?
He did, but other people have said it as well. Now, Chris Palmer also said that Jordan Clarkson's going to be better than Andrew Wiggins. So you take that for what it's worth.
No credibility.
Yeah, but I saw him say it, and I've seen two other people say it as well. Okay, Kobe, he's not Kobe anymore. I know his name's Kobe, but he's not the same player anymore. He scored okay last season, but from a basketball standpoint, he was a negative on the court. He was still a pretty good fantasy guy in head-to-head leagues. Jordan Clarkson was great, but I have a feeling that we may have seen the best season of his career. That stretch was probably the best stretch he'll ever have in his career due to the circumstances. D'Angelo Russell, we've got no idea. He's a rookie. Is he going to come out and just blow the league up? Probably not. And the other two guards are Lou Williams and Nick Young. There's some horrendous shot selection there. There's some horrendous defense. Lou Williams comes from being the reigning sixth man of the year. What we're talking about here, Seth, is fantasy. What does this mean for Lou Williams? Does he become a standard league guy still?
I liked Lou Williams a lot last year. I was able to grab him off free agency waivers pretty early in the season before he started getting a lot of minutes when DeRozan got hurt. And I won some leagues because of him. But I think any player playing with Kobe Bryant loses fantasy value. That's just what's going to happen. Kobe's shooting the ball 25, 30 times a game. He's putting his team out of contention in most of these games, which means guys like Lou Williams are going to sit the fourth quarter when they're down by 25, 30 points. I like Lou Williams next year when Kobe, we assume, so he says, is retiring. But this year, man, I don't think I can – I wouldn't draft Kobe. There's nobody on the Lakers I think I would be drafting very early at all. If you can get some guys later on, sure, whatever. But that's a team I'd stay away from in fantasy. Unfortunately for Lou, he's just not going to get a lot of shots, especially if Nick Young isn't traded. I mean, that's like those three are like a black hole of shots going up and banking. It's just like an awful combination. D'Angelo Russell's not going to shoot the ball well. Clarkson doesn't shoot the ball particularly well. Hibbert doesn't shoot the ball well. I mean, this is for all the people that thought the Lakers, oh, well, they're going to be improved. The Lakers could be the worst team in the NBA this year, aside from maybe the Sixers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They're probably the worst team in the Western Conference still. And yeah, that's flashy having Kobe, Lou Williams, Nick Young there, D'Angelo Russell. They're all flashy sort of names and players, but doesn't mean it translates into anything good. Fantasy-wise, I think they're all going to go too high for what they should be. Kobe's going to go too high. Clarkson will go too high. Russell will go too high. Young shouldn't go anywhere, but he will. These guys are all going to get drafted too high. Randall's going to go way too high. Hibbert will be the only guy who goes too low out of all these Lakers guys, because people will be like, yeah, Hibbert's rubbish, which he is at times, but getting 2 blocks a game, 2.5 blocks a game is not an easy thing to find. So you'll find that he probably goes a little bit too low, but everybody else is just going to go too high to be considered worthy. But yeah, it's not a bad deal. 3 years, $21 million. Mo Williams, on the other hand, 2 years, $2.4 million. That is extremely cheap. He should slot straight into that backup point guard role, taking over from everyone's apparent Finals MVP for the first couple of games, Matthew Dellavedova. If Kyrie's not right, there's a lot of value there for Williams early on. Now, we saw that him as the backup in Charlotte still got 30 minutes a night, but it's going to be harder in Cleveland. With J.R. Smith likely back, Kyrie, Iman Shumpert, is Williams standard league relevant?
I think he's relevant if you're a Kyrie owner. Look, there's no guarantee right now that Kyrie Irving is going to be ready for the season. He suffered a pretty bad injury. Even if he is, he's probably going to have his minutes watched a little bit. And we know from Kyrie's last few years, he gets hurt a lot. And we saw last year what Mo Williams was able to do in Charlotte while Kemba Walker was out. He blew up. In Minnesota, when Rubio was out, he blew up. So this is a guy that if he's starting, replacing an injured point guard, and he's getting minutes, he's going to have good numbers. He's going to be on a good team. But he's sort of like a handcuff if you're a Kyrie owner, a late round guy. Maybe draft him, see what happens in the preseason. Maybe another player gets hurt out of that, all the guys you mentioned just now. But otherwise, it's a better real life move than fantasy move. And it just looks like the Cavs are just trying to stock up. I mean, they're clearly trying to win in the next couple of years.
Yep.
with that signing. It's a great signing for them.
All we need to do really from a fantasy point of view is wait for a couple of things. Just J.R. Smith sign back. If he doesn't, then Williams gets value at the end of standard league drafts. And if we hear more information on Kyrie, whether he's going to miss the first couple of weeks or month of the season, whatever it is, then Williams has more value in that sort of situation. Rodney Stuckey signed back with Indiana for 3 years, $21 million. He is going to fit into a six-man role behind George Hill and Monte Ellis. So that means that he's a borderline standard league guy in most situations when he's starting as a sixth man. We don't need to pay attention there, but he becomes a solid 14-team league guy. I think that's probably where he sits because he's not getting the ball behind George Hill and Paul George and Monte Ellis. Anything to say on Stuckey?
No, I agree with that.
Kosta Koufos to Memphis, 4 years, $33 million. I think Kosta Koufos... What did I say? Memphis?
Memphis.
Yeah, from Memphis to Sacramento. I like Koufos as a player. It's maybe a little high considering they just drafted Cauley Stein and obviously Cousins is there. He's going to be the backup center, but he's just going to be the same guy that he was in Memphis pretty much. He's going to be the backup that plays... Well, he might get more minutes in Sacramento because Cauley Stein maybe not ready to take on the big minutes, but 22 to 25 minutes of Koufos does not equal 12-team value for me.
No, yeah, there's no value. That was one of the signings. I was like, are you serious? Koufos, $33 million. It's like just Sacramento being desperate and having to sign somebody because they missed out on everybody else. And yeah, so
I don't mind the money for Koufos if there was like an actual role for him there, but not after you've spent pick six on a center and you've got DeMarcus Cousins, unless that Cousins trade is potentially brewing and they'd play Cauley Stein at the four and Koufos at the five. But as a backup center behind two young guys, it's not like, he's in 2 years' time, he's going to bloom into a center and be the starter. Like, they've got two guys who are as younger than him, basically, ahead of him. And it's a little strange, but if it wasn't strange, it wouldn't be Sacramento. David West.
That's true.
David West to the Spurs, Manu Ginobili to the Spurs. David West at $1.4 million is probably the bargain of all time, but he goes from a standard league guy to not a standard league guy anymore. He becomes a deeper league guy. It also pushes Boris Diaw down a level. Also, I would say you got Aldridge and Duncan starting, West and Diaw as the backup guys coming off the bench. Obviously, Tiago Splitter's not there, but he barely played last season anyway. Do you have any thoughts on this, on David West? He's not a standard league guy, is he?
No, I don't think so anymore. Maybe a last couple round guy. There's a myth that Tim Duncan sits out games, which he doesn't. But
it is a myth.
Maybe
right.
Now they might. So I don't know. Maybe draft him late. But just fantastic move for the Spurs. I just, this is going to be a great team to watch again, like every year. And it really shows West faith in them winning a title, taking, you know, leaving 11, 12 million on the table for that. When he had opted out, I figured, oh, well, he's going to try to sign somewhere and get more. I did not think he was
or at least
that.
Get a long-term deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 35 years old, get a long-term deal, but good for him. You know, it's rare that we see it, but it's nice to see player actually saying, all right, I've made tens of millions. I'm going to try to finish my career by winning a title. And you know, and that's all I can say. It's a interesting thing to see, but it's a nice refreshing to see in sports because you usually do see the guys go after the money.
A lot of people say that they're all about winning, like Melo, and then they take on a max contract with a shit team, and that's exactly what he did. No offense to you, Seth, as a Knicks fan, but David West.
They call the Knicks a shit team? Come on, man.
Yeah, sorry. That's probably too high.
What basketball have you been watching?
I'm talking about the Westchester Knicks.
Yeah, the D League team.
Now, Manu's back as well for 2 years, second year's a player option. He remains the same. He's going to get 20 minutes a game, but he's still going to put up great numbers in that time, and he's a great streaming option. He can still give you 4 assists a night, 1.5 threes a night, 10 or 12 points in 20 minutes a night. It's not for everybody. It's not a must-own situation, but Manu is always underrated because people go, oh, he's going to miss games. Yeah, he will miss some games. You know, he plays low minutes, but I don't care if he plays 20 minutes because if he gets 4.5 assists in 20 minutes and hits 1.5 threes, it's still 4.5 assists and 1.5 threes. It doesn't matter if it's 20 minutes or if it's 30 minutes or if it's 40 minutes or if it's 10 minutes. The numbers are there, so he's great, a great option if you're looking for that extra bump in assists to throw in on a Saturday or Sunday in a weekly matchup and you need that bump in assists because he's gonna do that, especially with Corey Joseph leaving. They're going to need an extra ball handler. Patty Mills is a point guard, but he's not a point guard. He's a shooter. So Ginobili's going to have more of that second unit ball handling responsibilities. Let's go to Corey Joseph now. 4 years, $30 million in Toronto. That's a lot of money for Corey Joseph. Now, he was good when Patty Mills was out, when Tony Parker was out at the start of the season, but that's 4 years, $30 million to become the backup point guard in Toronto when they just drafted DeLon Wright as well. I don't understand it. I don't know what they're doing. I thought this was a great situation for DeLon Wright, going there behind Lowry with General Grievous now headed to Milwaukee. And then you pay this money for Joseph. It makes very little sense to me. Can you make anything of it?
No, it's a real shocker there. Maybe that he's Canadian. I don't even know. But, I mean, there is sort of a little bit of a hole to fill with Lou Williams leaving. But Corey Joseph isn't a shooter like Lou Williams.
He's not Lou Williams, yeah.
And like you said, he's going to be a backup. I don't really understand it. It's sort of up there with their draft pick last year when they drafted Bruno Caboclo, where you're like, wait, what? This guy's never going to even play or be, you know, good for a long time. So some questionable moves with Toronto. And I do like the Damari Carroll signing, though. So we'll see. They'll be competitive again in the bad Eastern Conference.
I can't wait to see Bruno at Summer League. I'm looking forward to seeing him play.
Him is and he in Vegas?
Yeah, he's playing. Yep. Okay. Him and Bebe Noguera for Toronto, two guys I really like. I can't wait to see. And the other guy that I want to see is my boy Livio Jean-Charles for the Spurs, who had 5 blocks in his Summer League debut yesterday. Can't wait to see him. He also shot 3 from 12, I think. But yeah, 5 blocks from a small forward was pretty impressive. Again, it is Summer League. Who is the next one? Aaron Brooks has apparently re-signed with Chicago. Nothing to see there. He's just that same guy. When Derrick Rose is out, he gets minutes. He should be ahead of Kirk Heinrich on the depth chart. Pretty much I should be ahead of Kirk Heinrich on the depth chart at this point in our respective careers. Jason Smith to Orlando, a 1 year, $4.3 million deal. He effectively just replaces Kyle O'Quinn, just to swap O'Quinn for Smith. But Smith may actually get minutes, unlike O'Quinn last season. Does he move ahead of Dwayne Dedman on the depth chart? Because he was useful at times last year, Jason Smith, for the Knicks. How do you feel as a Knicks man having Smith leave now?
I'm okay with it. But it's a good sign. It's a good signing for
He's a solid
Orlando
player.
Yeah, he can shoot. Yep. He's not going to really hurt you.
Seth is breaking up.
got me?
Yeah, you're back now.
All right. I don't think Deadman's ready yet, and it never hurts to add some size to your front court. It's a solid signing. It's not going to be fantasy relevant, though.
No.
At least for now.
Just touching on Orlando's big man, have you seen Aaron Gordon's Summer League performances? I know it's Summer League, but he looks...
I think I saw a couple of the box scores.
He looks like Tim Duncan. Not Tim Duncan. He looks like the best player I've ever seen playing against these players. He just looks like he's toying with them, and it's just completely different Aaron Gordon. He's hitting threes.
Did you see that last year in Summer League, though, too?
Nah, he was brutal. He was terrible in Summer League. He had a big block, and he had a big dunk, but he was disgusting in most of the other aspects of the game. But he is just toying with him, grabbing rebounds, hitting threes.
His athleticism is off the charts.
But he actually looks like he knows how to play basketball now, which he didn't look like he knew how to do last year.
The potential's there.
He's a late-round flyer to me. He's a guy that you pick after that pick 100 sort of mark, and he could blow up. I was really skeptical of him last season. I think Channing Frye is pretty much done. I think they would love to get... If Gordon can start hitting threes, which he's doing now, it's a huge sort of situation for them. And he definitely becomes a late round sort of guy for me if he continues this form. Couple of guys in Dallas, Charlie Villanueva, somehow got another contract, 1 year minimum value. We don't care about him. Jeremy Evans has signed a 2-year deal with Dallas. Now, Jeremy Evans has been a guy who's always been a great per minute player in Utah. Never for some reason gets an opportunity, even when they were terrible. He would never get decent minutes. He's not going to start, obviously, over Dirk or over DeAndre Jordan or get minutes there. But he becomes a guy that maybe when Dirk's out, he gets 20 minutes and he becomes a deeper league guy because he does get a lot of stats per minute. And I think most people think Jeremy Evans slam dunk champion, which is fine. But in terms of his ability to put up numbers in a fantasy setting, he does it when he gets the minutes. So he's someone to keep an eye on. Deeper leagues, definitely I would want to look at him. But he's someone to me that if he ever gets that opportunity, if someone goes down, you need to pay attention to him. Am I just in love with Jeremy Evans, or can you see something there?
You seem a little infatuated. I agree with you where his per minutes have been great. He's a high flyer. We've seen him in the dunk contest. But, you know, there's a reason why bad Utah teams have not played him, especially with injuries. I just don't think he's a great player. And I don't think there's any guarantee that Dallas plays, gives him a lot of minutes either. There's injuries, but he's not a guy I'm going to draft in any leagues. He's a waiver guy if he starts getting some minutes.
He's a deep, like 20 team league guy to me, but this is his per 36 numbers the last couple of seasons, 12 and 10, 12 and 9, 12 and a half and 10, 10 and 8. With last season, 1.5 blocks, 1.6, 1.5 steals, 1.6 blocks, 1.5 and 1.5 the year before, 1.5 and 2 the year before that. So the numbers are always there. He just never can get the minutes. So that's more my point, is that if for some reason they are forced to put him out there, and look, his other competition is Charlie Villanueva at the four, so there's a chance that he gets backup minutes. He puts up numbers in minutes when he plays. It's never going to be big enough to be relevant in standard leagues, but it's something you need to pay attention to in deeper type formats. Joe Ingles re-signed with Utah. He just becomes the same guy. He was a really good shooter last year. Hit a lot of threes, good assist numbers from a small forward, power forward. I think he was triple eligible in ESPN, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and that's has its own benefits. But he was a guy that hit a lot of threes down the stretch. But there's nothing to get too excited about with him, is there?
Not really.
Couple more guys to touch on, Seth. Wes Johnson to the Clippers on a 1-year minimum deal. That feels like a real steal to me at minimum value for Wes Johnson. They don't have they got Paul Pierce, but Paul Pierce isn't playing 30 minutes a night. They're apparently exploring trades to get rid of Jamal Crawford. They don't have a center. Wes Johnson was a guy who averaged a 3, a steal, and a block in 2013-14 for the Lakers in a high tempo, high octane offense. Now, the Clippers have got one of the best offenses in the NBA. He can also play the 4, which he played in Los Angeles as well. It's not like Blake Griffin's got a capable backup for the Clippers. He is a guy that is really interesting. At that price, I know it's only 1 year, but I think he can be really useful for them. He's better than half of the crap they've got on their bench. Better than Hedo Turkoglu, Big Baby, all that sort of rubbish that's there. He definitely wasn't as good as a fourth overall draft pick, but at that price, I think it's one of the biggest bargains in free agency.
Yeah, it's a good deal. I think that you're leaving out Lance Stephenson. He's going to compete with minutes with him. But
no, so I see Wes playing bigger. He plays 3-4 to me. I can see him playing more at the 4.
Yeah, I mean, if he does, then yeah. I mean, they're going to move Griffin to center. Is that what's going to happen?
If they can't get a center, it depends what they can. They haven't made any sort of moves to get anyone decent or anything like that. I think that even if they don't get it, even if they do get a center, at some point Griffin is going to have to play some center. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Look, but Griffin's small. He's not big. He struggles to be 6'9", I think. Yeah, he's not a big guy.
I think it's a good deal for them for sure. They had to do something. I don't know if you saw that J.J. Redick spoke in an interview and said that he gave the Clippers an F in free agency. That's what Redick said. So it's hard to argue. But I think as far as fantasy, he'll be a good steal at the end of drafts. Like you said, average a block, steal, 2 years ago. And the best thing about it is he won't have to deal with the Lakers rotations. I mean, he was one of the best players in the Lakers last year.
Yeah,
and I think he had a stretch towards the end where he had like 3 or 4 games where he was hitting 3 or 4 threes, scoring 20 points. And all of a sudden he had 3 straight DNP CDs because Byron Scott wanted to play, I don't know, whoever. So with the Clippers, at least we know he's going to get the minutes. He's not going to get screwed around. He's not going to get random benchings. He may not get 30 minutes every game, but at least we know that if he's getting 20 minutes every game, he's a guy you can own, and he probably will get that steal, block, and three if he's consistently playing every game.
Yeah, 22 to 23 minutes is probably where he'd look at, and it's probably not 10-team relevant, but some 12s, 14s definitely, and he's definitely underrated for his ability to produce in fantasy leagues. The last guy I want to touch on here, Seth, is Nemanja Jelica, who is the EuroLeague MVP from last season, played in Serbia, had a great season over there. He has signed a 3-year, $11.7 million deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, I don't think we need to be talking too much about Nemanja Jelica. Jelica. He was a second-round draft pick last season, but I saw someone on the Reddit Fantasy Basketball sub-forum or subreddit brought up a thread about him saying, you know, where do we look at drafting him? I commented on that and said, you don't. You do in certain situations, but he's not 10 or 12 team relevant at all, is he?
No, he's not.
No. Now, he is a good player. I think we need to, he does have maybe not quite the potential of, say, Nikola Mirotic, but he's a pretty good player. He's got a lot of talent. He can score, he gets rebounds, he hits threes. He's a decent talent. But what this, to me, when I look at this, Seth, is we look at the Timberwolves front court. Okay, so we've got Karl-Anthony Towns, the number one pick. Yep. We've got Gorgui Dieng, who's been really fantastic the last 2 seasons. There's Kevin Garnett, who, he's old, but he's going to play some minutes. There's Nikola Pekovic, who we know he's going to be injured, and we know he may miss the start of the season, but he's still an extra body there. And there's Adrian Payne, who they just traded a first-round draft pick to get last season, and who's headed into his second season and showed the occasional flash. So, who are the likely starters?
And is Anthony Bennett still there?
Oh, yeah, yes, right? And Anthony Bennett, yes.
I think the likely starters, assuming there's no trades, are going to be Rubio, Kevin Martin, Wiggins. Maybe they play Jang at power forward and Pekovic at center. I don't know if they start Towns right off the bat, having Wiggins and Towns in the starting lineup right away. But like you said, we know that Pekovic is going to get hurt, so move Jang to center maybe and Towns to power forward. But yeah, there's not a lot of minutes for a guy, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but not a lot of minutes. And they're a pretty deep team. I mean, you're talking about, look, they're a team that in a few years is going to be very good. They have Zach LaVine off the bench. They're looking pretty solid in a couple of years, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
There's a lot of, and that mention, I think you mentioned about Levine there as well, is that that's all he is to me. He I don't think he'll ever be a starting caliber. Yeah, he started and played great last season, but much like Clarkson, that's probably the best season Levine will ever have in the NBA. Or that stretch is probably the best he'll ever have, because he's never gonna get that opportunity of playing 40 minutes as the primary scorer and ball handler on a team. It's just not gonna happen. But back to Bjelica, he averaged 11.5 points last season, 8.2 rebounds, a steal, half a block. He hit a three a game at 37%. He hit 54% of his field goals, 71% of his free throws. They're pretty good numbers, but again, there's just too much competition there. But part of the thing is that signing him, getting another body over there, further solidifies my thought that Karl-Anthony Towns is not going to play 30 minutes this season. He'll struggle to play, like 27 is what I thought initially, and even that might be pushing a little bit high. He's a big man. He played like 20 minutes a game last season, and there are other options there that guys who have to get minutes. Garnett's going to get his 18 minutes. Jeng's going to get his 28 minutes. Pekovic, when he's healthy, will get 20 minutes when he plays. And they're not going to push him, obviously, because he can't handle it, but he'll still get 20 minutes. Payne will get some minutes. There's Justin Hamilton. I don't know if they're going to bring him back or not. And Anthony Bennett, you'd think they'd want to get something out of him or at least give him a look. So, Bjelica, no. Pretty good, decent dynasty prospect for a couple of years down the track, maybe. And the thing that Towns projects as an awesome fantasy player, I just think the minutes are going to be a real problem for him this year to become a player that people are going to take him high. If you had to guess now, where do you reckon that Towns is going to go versus where he should go?
I think you'll probably see him go in the range that Parker and Wiggins went last year.
Yep.
But I'd rather have other guys instead of him.
Yep. So
I'm not one to draft rookies very much unless they're just in an amazing situation. I'm getting like value on them.
Now that sort of range was between say 60 to 75 to 80. That's about where Wiggins and Parker went last year, I think. And I think that's probably where Towns will go. And yeah, that's great, because if he played 30 minutes a night, he'd be a top 75 sort of guy. I just don't think he's going to do it. To me, I'd be happy picking him around pick 100 and seeing how it goes. And the thing you always have with rookies is they start the season off terribly. Like pretty much every rookie was horrendous, in 2000, before the calendar flicked over to 2015. They're all horrendous. Nerlens Noel, Andrew Wiggins, Alfred Payton, they're all useless. You couldn't own any of them in standard leagues unless you just go, I'm just cruising and I'm just holding onto them on the bench. None of them were good. Mirotić was useless. Nobody was good. And they started kicking it off in January and February and getting better and better. So if you're picking Towns at pick 70, expect 3 months of not much and then get it to rise up a little bit, but it's not great. Now, if I'm talking dynasty, Seth, Towns is the number one guy to me, correct?
Yeah.
He's clearly the number one guy. He's a top 20 potential player in the league in a couple of seasons. Seth, I think that covers it all. Have you got anything else you want to chime in with?
Not really. Just it's nice to be on this format. I'm used to the audio.
And, yeah, well, I'm nice still releasing it as an audio. Yeah, it's still.
Well, then we get dual format now.
That's right. Just trying to get things a little bit different. And as the YouTube and the video stuff grows, allows people to interact live as we're talking. Had that a couple of times. As I might say something and it might sound like complete crap, and someone can chime in and call me out on it, and we can have a discussion live as we're going. So anyone who is watching these or listening to this, when I'm going to record them, I'll put out the live links. And if you want to chime in and call me out on something, or ask a question, or ask for clarity on something, we can cover it as we're doing it. And that's one of the benefits of doing this as well. Now, this will be most likely, Seth, my last podcast for the next week, because tomorrow I'm jumping on a plane and I'm heading out to Las Vegas for the Summer League. And I'm not, surprisingly, not taking on my podcasting equipment, but I will be doing, most likely, assuming how everything, I've got to see how everything plays out over there, but I will be doing some small videos, just probably me just holding my phone and recording some videos of my thoughts on what I've seen throughout Summer League while I'm there. So you'll probably see some videos up on the YouTube page, so make sure you're checking out those. I'll obviously tweet them out and Facebook them out and all that sort of stuff, but I will be doing some small videos whilst I'm there just to give my thoughts on what I've seen. I'm pretty pumped to get there and watch that. The first game, the first day, we're going to have Towns versus Russell. Really looking forward to seeing both those guys get out there as well.
Yeah, and don't gamble all your money away on the first day either.
No, I'm gonna be looking for some summer league lines. Get the over under on the Timberwolves Lakers first summer league game. Just throw it all away there.
Can you really bet on summer league?
I saw somewhere that yes, you can. I haven't been researching lines, but I've seen that someone mentioned that it can be done. Don't think I'll be doing that because let's be honest, who cares who wins these games? We just want to see these guys in action.
Yeah.
If anyone has any specific questions or things they want me to check out specifically in summer league, like, hey, can you see what this guy does? I really want to hear about how this guy's playing, whatever, let me know. And I'll do my best to give a report on those specific players that you guys want to see. Seth, let us know again where we can find your beautiful prose.
You can find me on Twitter at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman, because I'm cool like that.
Pretty cool.
Like that, not that. and you can find my writing at thefantasyfix.com, rasball.com, and I'm the editor at rotowriters.com. We're putting out great free agency content right now, gearing up for NFL season, fantasy baseball stuff. So check out our site. We're pretty new last couple months. So all the readers are appreciated. And thanks again for having me on. I'm glad you didn't make me do my Australian accent.
I'll give you more time to practice.
No, moratorium. but yeah, thanks for having me. And this is getting exciting. Basketball already. I mean, I'm not a fan of the NBA season going as long as it does. It really drags out. But the great thing is it's like we're a month. It feels like we're a month away from the season starting again. So there's some positive there. Looking forward to what should be a very fun and interesting season.
Definitely. Don't forget, follow Seth on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, Instagram, Facebook. Check out this YouTube channel if you are watching this or if you're listening to this, check out YouTube. And again, remember, I will have some Summer League stuff up on YouTube over the next week or so as I'm potentially dying from the extreme temperatures over there. So be aware of that. And if I look a little pinker than usual, you'll know why.
It's hot. Make sure you put some sunscreen out by the pool.
Yes. Considering I had this discussion where I had Chris Towers from CBS on last week and I was trying to discuss temperatures and conversions with him. I think currently here it's about, I think it's about 50 degrees, and in Vegas it's about 110. So it's yep. a little bit of a transition from what we've got happening here. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher and on YouTube. That is always fantastic in helping the show grow and get out to more people. So thank you very much to everyone who's done that so far. And leave a ranking or leave a comment or leave something to feedback, whatever it is you need to say, let me know. Thank you so much for listening and for watching. See ya.